hello again. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch Tuesday live cast dedicated to Ring of Honor. My name is Harley R. Padgett, and I cover ROH for the Pro Wrestling Torch. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Emily.
Hi, Harley.
Emily, this was a weird show.
Yeah, this is a really weird show. And also made all the weirder for me because instead of watching it Sunday at noon like I typically do, I discovered I can watch it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturdays. So I flipped to the channel about 15 minutes into the hour thinking, oh, well, I'll just catch the first 15 minutes later. But the episode itself had started late on the channel. So I actually did get to start at the beginning of the episode, but it was a promo followed by more promos. Disjointed all around. Not really, you know, didn't feel like watching an episode of television.
Yes, and I realize the hypocrisy in us calling an episode weird considering what we provided last week on this podcast.
Well, that is true. Our cool postmodern deconstruction of podcast. I mean, it was our experimental episode. Everybody gets one, right?
Yeah, nobody died. That's all that matters.
Yeah, no one died. It was short.
Very short.
Yeah.
So, all right, we got an hour of ROH television to dive into. Before we get to that, a short little aside. Friday was the CMLL 85th anniversary show, broadcast live on Honor Club, which is kind of a pretty cool thing. I didn't watch it, but it's pretty cool that it was there as an option.
Mm-hmm.
We had this with All In as well, and it'll be interesting to see if anything else comes this way in the future. ROH definitely has working relationships with Revolution Pro Wrestling and Stardom and other companies, so this could be opening the gates for something big.
Yeah, and New Japan was also showing this this show as well, so I don't know if they were streaming it live or if they were showing it later on in the day, but it's neat that both of these companies that have a partnership with CMLL, and that's, yeah. So you could see it either way, whether you're a New Japan subscriber or an Honor Club subscriber.
And the big ROH development was that in the main event, it was Matt Taven teaming with Volador Jr. to take on Rush and Barbaro Cavernario. I'm not familiar with those latter two, unfortunately. I don't really follow CMLL, but we've seen Volador Jr. in ROH a couple of times this year.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously know who Matt Taven is, although he may be unrecognizable the next time we see him, because they lost a 2 out of 3 falls, hair versus hair, take match, and Matt Taven had his head shaved bald.
That is correct.
I have not seen photos. I can't find anything.
I haven't watched it, so I haven't seen it yet either. I'm going to have to find, I'm sure I can find the photos if I search through Twitter. But yes, this, our tanned Pauly Shore of Ring of Honor is, no longer has his luscious locks. I wonder what that's going to do to his, female fan base.
Now he's going to be looking more like 2018 Pauly Shore.
Oh,
1993 Pauly Shore.
Oh no. Poor Taven.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see when he makes his... I assume Death Before Dishonor might be the first time that we get to see him in an ROH ring with a new look.
Wonder if he'll, invest in a really top-quality wig.
Yeah, some sort of, long, flowing Tanahashi wig.
Yeah, you know, it works for Tana.
Sure. So, that was that. On to this week's ROH television. Let's start, as usual, with the main event. SoCal Uncensored versus the Briscoes and Punishment Martinez. We have the Take Champs teaming up with the TV Champ. This seemed, coming out of last week's episode when Martinez got involved in the brawl, it seemed like we were going to be getting this match at some point soon.
Yes, which we did right away.
Yes. ROH has been doing some very... This whole feud has been like a WWE Raw feud.
It's been very quick turnaround, yeah.
But just like the tag wrestlers wrestling singles matches against each other alternating weeks, and then another guy gets involved and it sets up a big six-man tag. If this was WWE Raw, this all would have taken place in one night. Instead, it took place over the span of a month. But it's just, yeah, it's very much, this is how they do their tag feuds.
Yeah, this one was made all the more just kind of awkward because Chris Sabin obviously is challenging for the world TV title at Death Before Dishonor. And so he was there on commentary. And of course, he comes into play late in this match. But it had been set up in an earlier promo on the episode that, you know, it was like Scorpio Sky having beef with Punishment. And yeah, just a lot of moving parts to this that they've thrown together rather quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's because we got the problem with SCU where they're a trio and they're feuding with a tag team, but they're supposed to be the good guys. So how do you cheer the heroes when they have a numbers advantage? We got to figure out some way to make this work. And ROH likes their guest commentators, right? We got two this episode. It's like an easy thing to get a guy near the ring, get a girl near the ring during a match, and they can chat. Because there's not, ROH doesn't do interviews, right? That's the other thing. Lots of backstage promos where they stand in front of the ROH green screen and they just talk to the camera. But there are no interviewers. And that's kind of rare for a wrestling company.
Yeah. They don't. I mean, in this episode, when Ian goes to commercial and says he was going to be, you know, back in ring interviewing Sumi Sakai, I found that genuinely surprising. Just like we hadn't seen that in a long, long time.
Yeah, and Ian's good, obviously. Like, everything he does is great, so he can add to moments like that for sure. But at the same time, I don't think it would hurt them to have somebody else so that he doesn't have to get up from the commentary table and head to the ring to do these things. You know, they have someone, I'm sure they could find someone half as talented as Renee Young or Alicia to do a great job.
Yeah, I wonder, though, I mean, this is just conjecture, but... You know, this was shot, this taping was in Philadelphia. And when you typically go to a show, the TV taping or, you know, even like a touring show, like you don't typically get to see the commentary team all that much. You don't get to hear them. So, you know, having Ian in Philadelphia, knowing that he's not far from there, maybe that was kind of an extra incentive to like have put him in the ring for this presentation to Sumi.
Yeah, possible.
Yeah, but we are getting off topic here. We are talking about the SCU versus Briscoes and Punishment Martinez.
Do we have to? I don't hate this feud. It feels like it's been a lot of the same. Mm-hmm. Like we've had a lot of the Briscoes and SCU just punching each other and brawling. And the Briscoes taking a pin. It happened at All In. It's happened twice in singles matches on TV. Okay, once. One of them was a DQ loss. But, you know, they've just been a lot of the guys brawling and SCU come out on top.
Yeah. Yeah.
No real, like, adding, no, like, layers added to the story, right? They don't like each other. Is that the story? They don't like each other, and SCU need the goal to keep their jobs.
Yeah. SCU needs this win. SCU is, you know, making their face turn by being able to go after the Briscoes, who, you know, still remain very, very staunchly in the heel category. And, you know, I give ROH and, you know, actually probably a little bit more credit to being the Elite in getting these guys over as faces, because I'm enjoying them as faces more than I thought I would. Given how credible they are in their heel roles. So, you know, it's not, this feud hasn't been for naught. It's done exactly what they wanted it to do. And the audiences are like, clearly it's getting over with the audiences, but yeah, I mean, I do agree with you that like this match in particular kind of signaled out that we've been down this road a lot several times over the last several months, and we do need this story to take a turn somewhere after Death Before Dishonor, accomplishing whatever the storyline needs to accomplish, because it is getting rather repetitive, even with the addition of Martinez.
And I'm a stickler for internal consistency, logic, rules within your world building, all that stuff. There were a couple of things on this episode which just like really stretched the believability or like logic for me. And the instance here is referee Paul Turner takes a steel chair to the back. It's an accident. Okay, so be it. He goes down. More chairs in the ring. Chairs everywhere. SCU are getting beat on with chairs. And after the dust settles, Todd Sinclair runs out to the ring and counts 1, 2, 3. Now, Todd Sinclair is the ROH senior official. That has been clarified many times in the past. He's the top of the chain. So if anybody has the authority to come out and take over the match when Turner goes down, it's Sinclair. Okay, that's good. But he was clearly watching the match from backstage, right? He had to have been, because he knew to come out. So if he's watching from backstage and decides to come out and count the pin, then really, shouldn't he have run out to disqualify the Briscoes and Martinez once they started hitting everybody with chairs?
Well, you know, he was probably, like, he had his back turned for a second, or he's checking his phone. You know, any number of the many different distractions that can pull an official away from what they need to actually have their attention on.
Yeah, I know it's such a minor thing to quibble over, but it's another one of those weird things where I'm like, I don't know. It should have been no contest at that point, or blatant DQ. When he ran out and counted the 1, 2, 3, I'm like, I guess it gives the Briscoes more comeuppance that they took the loss even after all that.
Yeah, and, you know, it enters them into Death Before Dishonor, having just suffered an actual loss and not just, like, DQ by their own doing, so.
Yeah, I guess. All right, well, the other thing we got spiraling out of this was Sabin and Martinez.
Yeah.
Chris Sabin, who, okay, I'm going to let you go first, because you, I think, are a bigger Chris Sabin fan than I am.
I'm a big Chris Sabin fan.
First off, his backstage promo.
Oh my god. Oh.
Chris Sabin rules.
Chris Sabin rules. Which, you know, I totally agree with Chris Sabin. And honestly, I'm a really bad person to make a comment on this, because I think I have a soft spot for dorky promos. Like, the dorkier someone sounds in their promo, the more I'm likely to, like, be totally about it. So I know that's not what most people want in their promos. Most people want to be sold confidence and arrogance and domination and, you know, best in the world. I want a guy to, like, kind of awkwardly, like, hold out his fist and be like, Chris Sabin rules. I'm totally okay with that. So that does not rub me the wrong way. I will say, however, commentary aside, commentary totally serviceable, you know, in typical guest commentary style. And Chris Sabin has done commentary for, like, when he was in Best of Super Juniors, he on the finals, I believe, was on commentary for the Best of Super Juniors finals this year. So I like him on commentary a lot. But I understand that, like, his role there was to really serve to push his storyline with Punishment forward. And that included chasing Punishment Martinez offset with his shoe.
See, that's strike two for me.
What's strike one?
Strike one is Chris Sabin rules.
No!
At first, no. Okay, the promo, I was willing to kind of be like, that was, like, really weird and dorky, but maybe that's the point. Maybe it's, like, supposed to be, like a 90s throwback kind of promo where he's, like, cutting his promo on Monday Nitro or something. I don't know. I was like, okay, maybe that's, like, the point. He's going for, like, the cheese or the goofiness there.
Okay, that totally explains, too, why I might like it, because I am definitely more of a Nitro type.
But then, yeah, okay, and again, him getting involved, chasing off Martinez, sure. Except Martinez has been built up as this scary monster-type tough guy who just, like, recklessly throws around cheeseburger and guys like that. And he's being chased off because the guy's holding his shoe?
Yeah, and it is not helped by the fact that Punishment does have, like, a decent amount of inches on Sabin. I don't know if it's an entire foot, but it's a decent amount of inches. So this, like, big, tall, apparently, like, you know, evil man is being chased off with a shoe wielded by a guy who's probably about, you know, 5 inches shorter than him.
And it's the same thing. I was like, is this supposed to be funny or not? If it's not, really weird choice. If it is supposed to be funny, equally weird choice.
I mean, it's a head scratcher kind of in both directions. I don't think it was supposed to be 100% serious. As a comedy spot in the moment of the, like, in this particular moment, I don't necessarily get it. Like, I know they have to get...
Yes, as follow-up to Martinez bashing in the teeth of his take partner and best friend.
Yeah.
I'm going to get you with my shoe.
I'm going to take whatever I have handy, and that's my shoe. And not, like, I don't know, a chair, which there's always chairs. Why did he not just chase him off with a chair?
There were literally three chairs lying on the floor ringside.
Why didn't he just chase him off with a chair?
I don't know.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is, we didn't know what we would get from Chris Sabin's singles wrestler once the machine guns broke up, and I still don't know what to expect.
Well, I saw quite a bit of Chris Sabin's singles wrestler in Best of Super Juniors, and there were no shoes involved.
No, I didn't realize they wrestled barefoot over there.
I mean, oh, well, yeah, depending on who's the wrestler.
All right, well, that was our main event, so...
Yeah.
get pumped. And the only other real match on the show was an enhancement match. It was Sumi Sakai versus Tasha Steelz, the badass Boricua, I believe they called her.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yes, I don't know. I tried to look up some information on Tasha because I wasn't familiar with her. Didn't find much. She's an independent wrestler, wrestling for about 3 years. Small promotions I've never even heard of. So, but she looked good in the limited window of stuff she got to do.
Yeah, I thought she came in pretty nice. She looked pretty sharp. As for an enhancement match that this ended up being, really, really not bad. Like she did, she made a good show of herself.
Now, here's a question that I had when this was happening, and I'll throw it to you. Does Sumi still need enhancement matches at this point?
I don't think so. I think that this was to fill out the card, to have a match, because, you know, especially given how many promos they were fitting into this, like, streak of time within this taping, I'm guessing this was just a way to, like, use, like, fairly local-based talent to, you know, have an enhancement match for Sumi and fill out the card. But no, truth be told, I don't think so. Because what? She has a perfect record. And the
She's
best 11
record. 11-0 in ROH this year. Best record in the company. Only person undefeated in the company, I want to say, like, with more than, you know, two or three matches.
Yeah, something that was highlighted quite a bit after this match was over, when we throw to her and Ian in the ring, and he's giving her the, you know, presentation about the Women of Honor Championship becoming the World Championship. A lot of this felt like further build up for Sumi, further inflation of Sumi as, like, the title holder of, as the, you know, star of Women of Honor, in a way that to me kind of feels like they're setting her up for a loss at Death Before Dishonor.
Yeah, but then at the same time, it's like, this is the first time we've seen Tennille in weeks.
Sure.
You're going to have her win the title next week?
Yeah, I'm starting to feel that way because, and I don't know that I can ground it with that much reason other than a gut feeling that, like, all this lip service paid towards Sumi's, like, greatness and her, like, her, you know, the debt of gratitude they owe her for being, you know, such an integral part of the Women of Honor brand. I feel like a lot of that is setting her up for, like, that title to change over.
Okay, well, quick note, I looked it up, and the only other singles wrestler in ROH this year to wrestle at least two matches and be undefeated is Chris Sabin at 2-0.
Hey!
Everybody else, pick any other name on the roster, and they've lost at least one match.
There you go.
But, yeah, so I, on the one hand, I almost thought Tennille would have benefited more from having the enhancement match against Tasha than Sumi, because Sumi's already was 10-0 before this. Tennille's only had 6 matches total in, or like singles matches, I want to say, in ROH this year. She's had 2 on television in 9 months. So, you know, she could use the spotlight a bit more, and then you could have Sumi come out afterwards and challenge her there. But I guess the idea was to get Sumi in the ring so that they could make the official world championship announcement, which was a very cool moment. We shouldn't gloss over that.
No,
it's very cool. It's officially world title now. They had alluded to that a while ago. I want to say when she made her first defense on the Honor United tour back in the spring, mm-hmm. the commentators spoke about the fact like, well, this is the fact that she's defending in a different country means it's officially a world title now, right? And I had actually been referring to it as the world championship in my reports ever since then, because I assumed it already was. But now it's officially official.
Yes, it's officially official.
Which is cool. And I liked her little promo, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of companies would be like, WWE does this a lot. Oh, they're not perfectly 100% fluent, so we're not going to let them speak at all. We're going to hide them. We're going to, like, not let them say anything. And I like that Sumi just owned it and said, like, I speak broken English, but I'm going to do my best. And the fans applauded that. Like, yeah, like, well, we appreciate the effort.
Yeah, I appreciate her making, I've either read this or heard this, that she is very shy about her ability to speak fluently, which is one of the reasons why she doesn't do it more on camera for ROH. And I appreciate them giving her the space and time to do that. And every time she does speak on mic, I'm thrilled that she, you know, takes that, because that's, you know, that's a brave thing to do, even when you are a star in a company. And I'm glad that Ring of Honor, you know, respects her place there and gives her that space and time to be heard, broken English or not. I think she sounds perfectly fine. And the fact that she can speak English far better than a lot of the gaijin who work in Japan, I'm sure. So the other thing I was thinking about this, as far as why this was an enhancement match for Sumi and not for Tennille, is more of a practical speaking reason, in that I get the sense with Tennille that they maybe don't have the ability to use her, like, to use her talent, to use her in ring and have her in matches with quite the frequency that they can with Sumi. This might just be like an early aspect of her first like full year with Ring of Honor. But I'm wondering if maybe if they have her in limited quantities right now, they might be saving up her matches for later this fall, say if she gets the title.
Well, she actually, Tennille had to miss the last bout of the Honor Reunited tour in the UK at the last minute. And after that, she'd actually put out an official tweet saying that part of the reason that we maybe don't see her as often as we'd like to, as she'd like to, is that she has psoriasis.
Ah.
And that often like results in all sorts of things, from rashes to full body flares that just make it really painful, obviously, to compete or to take a bump, I'm sure, right? If you got like skin problems with your back and stuff like that. So that might be a big contributing factor too to how her scarcity.
Yeah. Yeah, and that might be part of just the reason why she's like not available, why she might have a limited deal with them for right now.
So you still think they're gonna put the title on her then?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do, because they have to do something with Tennille, and I'm just gonna lay it out there, and this is not a read on Tennille, because I believe that she can do a lot in ROH. I believe that she has done a lot with her career. I'm excited to see the things that she could do once she has a storyline that really works for her. I'm not excited by the work that I've seen from her in the company so far. That is not saying that I don't think that she is capable of great work. I do. I was excited by the prospect of her in ROH. But at this point, every match that I have seen her wrestle, I've admittedly just been kind of underwhelmed with her role in ROH as of now. And maybe that's somewhat due to limited capacity, due to multiple factors. But I get the sense that ROH wants to build her up more than the audience has actually really followed. And they may need to put a title on her for a storyline to get going.
I admit that I haven't been as wowed by her in ROH as I was when she was in NXT. And for that reason, I think Sumi should beat her at Death Before Dishonor and have Tennille turn heel on her.
Ah.
I thought Dashwood did some great work in NXT as the heel. That's where All About Me derived from, right? She wanted the spotlight on her. She wanted, like...
Yeah, All About Me is a heel tagline.
Yeah, and she started wearing the aviator sunglasses to, like, look cool and aloof and stuff like that. So, and her and Sumi do have a well-established friendship in ROH. They've teamed together multiple times on house shows and other events. So I think it would be a nice betrayal that would, like, sting a certain way and give them more reason to keep feuding, give a story to put behind it.
Yeah. And I think that heel turn is likely. I just could see her winning that way.
Cheating to win or something.
Yeah, exactly. Getting desperate, grabbing that, you know, whatever, and pulling out a win by, you know, resorting to heel tactics. And then we see a heel turn from Tennille.
All right. Well, next week on our podcast, we'll make our official Death Before Dishonor predictions. But there you go. There's an early one, listeners. Emily thinks she turns heel to win. I think she turns heel because out of frustration because she loses.
Ah, okay.
And anything about Brandy being on commentary?
I liked her and Caprice kind of going back and forth. Caprice doing more of a heel commentary than we're used to with our two typical team.
Speaking of interviewers, I kind of miss the pulpit.
Yeah, I mean, they mention it in the commentary, and last time we saw Coleman's pulpit, it was not great, if you remember, with the Kingdom.
Oh, with the Kingdom. Yeah, but I blame Marcellia and Orion, as I usually do.
Sure, although, you know, if we see the pulpit again, I would prefer a little less like Tim and Eric and more a little bit, you know, actual backstage interview. But yeah, I liked hearing Brandy on commentary, and her and Caprice have like a fun back and forth, like ribbing of each other. So that's always a good energy to put into it.
Yeah, so last pulpit was July 8th with the Kingdom. Not good. But before that, it was April 8th with Jay Lethal, and that was terrific.
Okay.
So if we can get back to the pulpit of the spring with Coast to Coast and Kenny and stuff, that could be some good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not discarding it. I just really, please, I do not want to see that. If that was the avenue they decided to start going down to, you know, get the like cringe comedy crowd behind it, I would really advise them against that move.
And I'm wondering when we're going to see Brandy compete again. It appears that she's fully healthy now. We saw her do a crossbody onto a group of people recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I assume she's ready to compete again. And it's been a while since we've seen her wrestle.
It has been. I'm a little surprised we haven't seen her back in the ring for Women of Honor, but it's also possible that given everything else that's been going on with the Rhodeses, that wrestling, even, you know, in the capacity that she was before she got injured, is not at the top of her list.
Yeah, we'll see. It's been a while since we've seen Kelly Klein and Jenny Rose, and they're in the middle of a feud right now, too. There's just not enough time in the broadcast for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, that can change, and it's exciting to be wondering where these people are and when we're going to see them again, because with Women of Honor, for at least a little while, it felt like we were seeing the same four faces over and over again. So it's good to have some players in the, you know, in the back.
Yeah, I just wish there was a way to keep these things going week to week, you know, without, not in full-fledged ways, but Lucha Underground does a good job of X and Y will have a match this week. And then the following week, there'll be a 40-second backstage video of them in the locker room or X talking to somebody else about Y to further developments that way in different ways. So you still have the stories sort of in play. Whereas ROH does this thing where you have like a big segment dedicated to Josh Woods and Shane Taylor or Kelly Klein and Jenny Rose, and then we don't see them again for a month.
Yeah, and that's mainly because of ROH still trying to very rigidly hang on to the things that, like, the reputation and the style of show that they, you know, built themselves from, which was, you know, very match-based and not a whole lot of, like, not a whole lot of like extra, you know, you get your promos, a little bit of backstage stuff here and there, but Ring of Honor still really does rigidly adhere to what the basic formula that they have been using since they, you know, started making a weekly TV show in one capacity or another. So yeah.
Are you purposely channeling Jay Lethal right now?
Oh, no, but that was a good segue.
His opening promo where you don't need stories or angles. You just need two wrestlers having a great match.
If anyone knows me as a wrestling fan, they know I hate stories. Gosh, who needs a character? Who needs storylines and relationships and things to build a thrust on? Nope, just give me two guys going at each other. Actually, I mean, I don't totally disagree with Lethal. Like, I think that that's the cool thing about wrestling right now is that we are getting great matches that are built on something as basic as these two really talented guys have had a series of matches, and they're going to have another one that's even better. But, you know, I don't totally agree, because obviously Jay Lethal himself out of character would agree that, like, you know, story is everything with wrestling. Even the two guys in the ring, that is a story.
Yeah, I mean, I've said before, I'm all about the stories and the characters first and foremost. That's what draws me to it. My mom used to derisively refer to wrestling as male soap operas when I was a kid. And sure, yeah, that's totally what it is, right? And that's what drives me to it. I don't watch boxing or MMA specifically because they don't have characters or, like, you know, stories and, like, big things. Not in this exciting kind of superhero way. I would take a okay match with a great story over a great match with no story most days.
Yeah.
That's me. And I, as an example, All In, what are the first two, three things you think of? The match and the big moment.
I mean, you think of Cody.
Sure. Or you think of Joey Ryan and his parade.
Yeah. You think of the Dicks.
Yeah, you're not really thinking of Matt Cross and MJF, probably. Not first.
Not first, no. And honestly,
probably not even the main event.
Yeah, probably not the main event. And maybe not even, well, I guess, yeah, I would probably think of the Hangman and the Hangman's match because it had the most story involved. Think of Cody's big moments. Probably Omega, if we're just thinking off the top of our heads, you know. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Yeah, but there's the dichotomy, right? You have Omega and Pentagon, great match, no real story, and it was a great match.
Yeah.
But Cody and Aldis, Cody winning the title and Aldis and all that, probably the emotional peak of the show.
Yo, most definitely. Most definitely.
Because of the story, so
yeah,
it's I don't know. It almost seems like, and I came away from this like, is his open challenge gonna be like an ongoing thing that he's gonna do every week? Because obviously he's not dropping the title at Death Before Dishonor, so is he gonna keep doing open challenges after this? And if that's the case, is it just an excuse so ROH doesn't have to do stories? They can just throw out matches whenever they want, and we don't need angles anymore. We don't need feuds.
Well, you could say that, but then like this whole segment, because I mean, okay, actually we're kind of blending these two things. You know, we get Lethal's segment, we get his challenge, finally we get the announcement for what his match is going to be, and then later on, Mr. I don't need a story, I just need a big match, I just need a good match, a match against, you know, like a competitive match in a ring, blah blah blah, fighting spirit. Now Lethal is in a storyline with Gresham and against Bully Ray and Silas Young. Like, look who's in a story.
Yeah, maybe he just has a personal objection because in his mind, story means some guy being like a dick.
Yeah.
To him. I'm sick of stories.
Well, can't blame you. And there's a lot of different ways to have a story. You know, you don't, I mean, obviously the face heel dynamic is your classic structure. And like, that is a story that like people use over and over again, cause it's very satisfying. But you know, we are seeing all number of stories being told in the ring these days, and ROH can deliver really compelling stories when they're really, when they're booking right. So I wouldn't say that ROH's storytelling is my favorite of current stories out there in of promotions, but you know, Lethal can use a good story. He just maybe doesn't want the same old, like, this guy's a jerk and now I gotta beat him up.
Hey, you know what? Probably my favorite ROH story the past couple of months.
What?
Jay Lethal's Road to Redemption.
It very clear, right?
Yeah, so burn on you, Jay Lethal.
Yeah, and Jay Lethal's open challenge is a story.
Just a story with a weird ending, because we've been talking for weeks about who Lethal might defend against at Death Before Dishonor. Our money was on Matt Taven. I thought maybe Gresham would get involved after last week's show. And instead, no, not even close.
Nope.
No, Jason versus William Ospreay.
Will Ospreay.
Yeah, so I don't watch New Japan. I follow it here and there, but I don't really watch it. And so it's been a while since I've seen Will Ospreay, because he hasn't been in ROH in a while. Tell me about the Will Ospreay of 2018.
Okay. Well, Will Ospreay, the vast majority of spring, Will Ospreay was the junior heavyweight champion. I believe he defended the title a few times in the spring. And then at Best of Super Juniors, he did not win his block final. He was beat by Taiji Ishimori, otherwise known as Bone Soldier. And the final for Best of Super Juniors was Ishimori versus Hiromu Takahashi, with Takahashi getting the win. And then in June, Takahashi fought Will Ospreay for the title and won. So Ospreay has been without the title for a couple months now. As far as what he's been doing in recent months, so he had a really good spring, you know, a good winter, good spring, and then, you know, not so great start to his summer in New Japan. But after Dominion, the story about Will Ospreay in New Japan goes kind of quiet, because he's hasn't been around. I think he's been doing stuff at Rev Pro. I know he's been having matches. I see stuff. I think I follow him on Twitter. I definitely see stuff posted about his matches. But the latest tour, the Destruction Tour that started last week, this is the first I've seen of Ospreay in like 2 months in New Japan. Because, I mean, he's a junior heavyweight, so while he was in the Best of Super Juniors tour, he wasn't anywhere to be found during the G1, not even during the tag matches at the beginning, where they often use junior heavyweights to, like, fill out the cards. So right now, it's kind of an awkward place. Will Ospreay's storyline in the Destruction Tour has been mainly, like, him trying kind of an awkward fashion to challenge Kota Ibushi, who is a heavyweight. So there's some interest there as far as like New Japan adheres fairly rigidly to like junior heavyweight and heavyweight, you know, categories of fighters. So juniors and heavyweights don't tend to fight each other in singles matches. But, you know, that's where Ospreay's head is at right now in New Japan. So it's interesting, though, because now he's challenging a heavyweight, like, you know, for real heavyweight in ROH. But of course, ROH doesn't operate by the same rules.
No, but I wonder if ROH operates by any rule, because this was another Lethal does this impromptu, spur of the moment, open challenge. I wrestled Jonathan Gresham last week. I had a blast, and I just want to put an open challenge to anybody in any locker room around the world, wherever. And some guy in the production truck is like, oh, awesome, I have this video of Will Ospreay accepting that he sent in a couple of days ago or a couple of weeks ago, and I'll play it right now. Just so, I don't know. Again, you know, if Lethal, in such a simple solution, right? Last week or this week, whatever, if the pay-per-view wasn't 10 days from now. But a week ahead of time, you have Lethal say, I'm putting an open challenge out, and next week we'll see who responds. And then next week they get this video from Ospreay, and it's like, oh, great, amazing. But the fact that he had it right then on the moment when he just announced this thing, so awkward.
Or Will Ospreay just has made like a dozen challenge videos to title holders all over the world, and he's just been sending them out left and right.
If they hadn't hit stop at the end of his video, we would have seen a quick jump cut, and they would have been like, "Sumi Sakai, I'm coming."
Exactly. I honestly think it's totally on brand for Will Ospreay to have made like a dozen different videos to send to different promotions, title holders. Just like, I'm going to come for you. It's kind of what he's doing right now with his storyline in New Japan. Like, his storyline with New Japan is just like, Kota Ibushi's in front of me. Kota Ibushi's a big star. It's like a big of the moment guy right now in New Japan. So I'm going to go after him. I want Ibushi is what he keeps saying. So I don't know. In practical speaking terms, I totally agree with you. Like, it's kind of silly. Like, oh, we just happen to have this tape where Will Ospreay is accepting your open challenge. But I also, if it was going to work for anyone, it works for Ospreay.
And I mean, he did win the television title in his ROH debut.
Yes.
So it's not implausible that he could win his world title, the ROH world title, in his first world title matchup.
Well, and he's lost to Jay Lethal before, so like they have a little bit of history in ring together.
Yes, Ospreay has made one appearance in ROH this year on January 13th television, losing to Jay Lethal.
Yes.
So there you go. It's I guess there's some story there, but I mean, we're gonna need a video package or something next week to really make this not feel like a totally random throwaway match, because I highly doubt that Ospreay is going to win the ROH world title.
Yeah, I
in his first appearance in the company in 8 months.
Yeah, no, I don't believe so.
And yeah, you know, this coupled with the 10-man tag, coupled with even the women's match, like, there's a bunch of matches on this card that have like no storyline support. They just like all of a sudden this match is just announced and get excited. Yay.
Yeah, which makes me want, like, Death Before Dishonor is not like one of the biggest pay-per-views that ROH does. So for me, a lot of these matches are like, I'm okay with not, I'm trying to get myself satisfied with the idea that like these matches are going to take us someplace and they aren't meant to be the destination. They are not the destination. These are actually like the journey start points.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. They might be the start of our road to Final Battle, because that's really the culmination of everything.
For real. And I'm noticing that ROH is doing that does this kind of similarly to New Japan, either incidentally or on purpose, in that, you know, Destruction is a tour that is based off of a lot of storylines that are culminating from G1, but what it's really doing is it's painting a further picture for Wrestle Kingdom in January. So in the same way, ROH has Final Battle to be building up to. Death Before Dishonor can feel a little ramshackle, but I'm hoping that by the end of the pay-per-view, we're going to walk away and be like, okay, so the next several months, here are the things we're going to see, and those are the storylines that we're going to see, you know, culminate in December.
Well, we've actually got Glory by Honor on, I want to say, October 13th. So another kind of pay-per-view style event not too far from now.
Like, gosh, that is really close.
Less than a month from today, like two weeks or so after Death Before Dishonor. So, yeah, kind of a weird time, I guess.
Yeah, but
for ROH,
I don't see anything major being like wrapped up for that particular event.
No, and I mean, maybe it's good that we have so many pay-per-views, because Bully Ray's got like 5 different opponents lined up now already.
Sure, I mean, we're going to have an entire...
Lethal has none, and Bully Ray has like a dozen.
When do we get the Battle Royal where it's like 20 guys against Bully Ray?
Yeah, I'm saying, I don't know if it's a handicap match or a gauntlet match, but there's got to be some lumberjack match. I don't know.
What did we suggest the other week? That it should be like a Hell in a Cell type match, but it's just Bully Ray, like, dealing with his inner demons?
Sure, yeah, I go back and forth. Yeah. Bully's got they got to do something with his steel chain, right? Like a Texas bull rope match, but it's a steel chain instead of a bull rope. New York steel chain match? I don't know. But yeah, so, okay, we got our weekly Bully Ray appearance.
Sure.
Jonathan Gresham being interviewed by Ian about the Iron Man match. Bully comes out, and I did like that he came out and he just walked right past Gresham and pretended he wasn't even there.
Yeah, seemingly out there just to, like, you know, get in Ian's face.
But it was nicely played because he specifically went after Ian knowing that Cole Cabana wasn't there. Because I want to say when this was taped, it was during the month that Cabana was over in Edinburgh for the Fringe Festival.
Ah, okay.
That's why Coleman was on commentary and Colt wasn't there. So, yeah, I liked him, you know, bullying Ian, knowing that Colt's not around to do anything about it. I liked Gresham getting in his face. I don't know. How did you feel about Gresham saying, I can't beat you in a fight?
Oh, I felt totally...
Like, owning that.
I felt totally good about it. I felt the same way about it as I felt the minute he called him Bubba for the first time. I thought it was great. I thought Gresham did a nice job of, like, pushing back against Bully in the way that is seemed very distinctly in Gresham's wheelhouse. Being honest about, like, the fact that Bully's got a ton of size on him and obviously is probably, if they were having just a throwdown fight, could take him. But wrestling-wise, Gresham, like, is confident in his abilities and also confident in his knowledge of what Bully can and cannot do. And I loved the little jabs at him, calling him Bubba, telling him that he'd been watching, you know, Devon Carey has asked for 20 years. I thought that was great. This whole segment to me, though, like, it's funny. This segment was like, ROH is really, like, doing their best ECW impression. Because from, like, top to bottom, this felt like a very ECW segment.
Well, and Gresham goes from being really smart and astute. I know I can't beat you in a fight, but I'm pretty sure I can beat you in a wrestling match. Knowing the right barbs to send that Bully to really get him fired up and whatever. But apparently Gresham wasn't smart enough to know that Bully wasn't actually going to wrestle him.
Yeah.
Like, that, come on. How did anybody not see this coming a mile away?
Yeah, that, but again, and that would bother me, except that this felt to me like ROH cosplaying as ECW, and that would be like a total ECW move.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right. So the bell rings. Bully kicks him between the legs. Ding, ding, ding. Your winner, Jonathan Gresham, in the record books. And then we get the schmaz, the one guy after another. And, ooh, okay. Oh, we forgot. Bully made a point. He specifically used the J word. He called Jonathan Gresham a jobber.
Yes, yes.
However, I will go on the record as if anybody, out of everybody involved in the segment, if anybody looked like a jobber, it was Flip Gordon, who takes one big boot and disappears for the rest of the segment.
Oh, my God.
So much for your big, like, all-in moment, Flip.
Yeah. I was actually, it led me to wonder, really, what is going to happen to Flip right now? I mean, he's got this rivalry. It hurts his rivalry with Bully to, like, have him come out, take a boot, and then go down for the entire rest of the match, because he's supposed to still be feuding with Bully Ray, right? Like, they're still supposed to be... Like
at the last pay-per-view, they were feuding, and now all these other guys have jumped in line ahead of him, and he's an afterthought, it seems.
Yeah, so he just gets kicked out of the way.
Yeah, he's not even in the tag match next week.
Yeah, and with All In being, you know, over, and, like, that storyline concluding... What is Flip to do?
I don't know. I just hate stuff like that, because it's like, if it was Flip versus Bully in a match and the bell rings to start the match and Bully hits a big boot, Flip would go down and he'd be up on his feet 12 seconds later, right?
Yeah.
Because the match just started. But here, somehow Bully hits, like, one boot to him and he's dead at ringside and we don't see him again for the rest of the segment.
Yeah, he doesn't even, like, get any kind of, like, he doesn't really get to land anything on Bully.
Yeah, but, I mean, it did set up the fun. Lethal coming out was, like, a great moment.
Yes.
Because you wouldn't think he'd get involved in a segment like this. He's got his own stuff going on. He's got Ospreay, he's got the title or whatever. And so it makes him look like such a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
That he's that even though he's got his own stuff going on, he's coming out and he's making the save and he's helping out his friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And specifically, he's, you know, it's furthering this bond between Lethal and Gresham.
Yes, I'm all about Tennille turning heel on Sumi, but if Gresham turns heel on Lethal, I'm going to be heartbroken.
Oh, I don't foresee that at all. There's no real reason to do that. Like, Gresham and Lethal had like a completely honored fight when they had their Iron Man match. You know, when Gresham demanded 5 more minutes to have a proper finish to it, Lethal gave it to him. Lethal didn't have to, and he did. So the storyline that they've set up with these two guys is that there is a strong, strong sense of mutual respect, a mutual respect that is carrying through with a feud now with Bully and with Silas, because obviously we get the save from Lethal, but then who should appear?
The last real man, and he's a heel. He's staying a heel. He's not doing a babyface turn from the looks of things. It is the situation where I think he was stuttering, he was kind of lost, and Bully's treatment of him the past couple of weeks, rather than push him into being a babyface, pushed him back towards being the old heel, the heel that won the TV title 2-3 times, the heel that made a name for himself in ROH in the first place. Mm. So, I mean, on the... For the time being, I like it. The fans responded accordingly. It definitely sounded like there was a curse word bleeped out of the fan chants there.
Yeah, that is not a cadence of chanting that you hear. There were definitely...
People don't chant, you Silas.
Silas, silence, Silas. No, they're definitely... that there is something else in there. I did appreciate, however, that they just bleeped it out and didn't just sub in. Sometimes when they do that... ROH, as many promotions will do, subs in like just a generic crowd chant of them chanting the company name, which I think is just kind of obnoxious.
Well, yeah, so Silas is back, and he wouldn't hug Bully after the match, as happy as Bully was to see him do this, wouldn't hug him. So some interesting developments there, at least, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the post-match, the backstage stuff, this might have been like one of my favorite things of all the whole episode, in all honesty.
Oh, easily. This, I think, is my favorite part of the entire episode.
I liked it's something that we don't see normally, right? The guy's coming through the curtain immediately afterwards, away from the standard promo set. Mm-hmm. I loved how fired up Lethal was. He's pacing back and forth. He's just whatever. Then Gresham comes in, Lethal calls him over. Jonathan, get over here. And then they just Lethal put how Lethal put over Gresham too. He doesn't need my protection. He doesn't need my help. That's not why I was out there, right? To really, in case you're watching it, oh, it feels like the little kid needs like his big brother to come and save him. That's not what this is. This is two guys who like each other and respect each other, and we're friends. And we're tired of this BS. We're tired of Bully Ray. We're tired of all of this, and we want vengeance.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked the like attention to keeping Gresham over in that promo, and just like the kind of the rapid fire nature of it, the urgency about it, the huffiness about it. I mean, obviously, like, you know, wrestlers can play on that energy probably a little quicker than almost any other kind of energy, that like amped up, like fired upness. But I really felt it from Lethal. I felt like the whole deal. I dug it. Dug it completely. And I'm excited to see this tag match, because I think it is interesting that, you know, Lethal and Gresham are a united front going into this, whereas Bully and Silas, you know, still, it's not entirely clear that they are.
Ooh, maybe it's Silas's turn to walk out on Bully.
You know? That's what I was...
I hadn't thought of that before. I was thinking about this an hour ago and going, I don't know how they're going to... Gresham's not going to take another pinfall, is he? But yeah, maybe that's the solution.
Yeah, that to me seems more like, I mean, that to me seems like a very plausible scenario. And, you know, goodness knows, Silas owes one to Bully Ray.
But yeah, the Lethal and Gresham story, like their friendship, is one that I'm really getting behind. But because both guys are just coming across as such good guys, so honorable and true, respecting the tradition of ROH, respecting pro wrestling, and wanting fair matches and things like that. And also, it's been such a slow, natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They interacted a little bit back when they had their first match. In the spring, was it? Maybe in the winter? I don't remember now. But it's been such a slow, slow build-up to them being friends now. And too often in wrestling, you don't see people having friendships unless they're in a specific, like, full-time tag team or some sort of stable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of like a cool development, too, is that they don't need to team together all the time or form a stable or anything like that. But every so often, when they need help, when they need support, they're there for each other.
Yeah, they formed a bond based on their, like, mutual respect that was, you know, partially built through these matches that they had with one another. That's kind of great. That's, you know, that's the same way that you see tag teams build a bond by, like, fighting alongside of each other. But instead you have these two guys who, you know, had a couple of matches that were, you know, each better than the last and have, you know, have earned each other's respect in the best way possible in, like, in the wrestling world by, like, fighting for it in a very real fashion. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, and it opens all sorts of new avenues, right? You could have a couple of months from now or something, Lethal offers to team with Gresham and try to go after the tag title so that Gresham can hold gold for the first time. Or Gresham could get a shot at the TV title and Lethal offers to sort of, like, coach him or be in his corner. And maybe that sets up something with somebody else. Like, there's all sorts of new avenues here.
Sure. Absolutely. And you know what? For me, the treat is that it gets Jonathan Gresham more and more over with the ROH crowds. And that, to me, is the best part about this whole thing, because Gresham deserves this attention. Obviously, Lethal deserves it too, but he already has it. He's the title holder. He is the company mainstay. He's not going anywhere. But I'm really glad that for once, like, talk is about Jonathan Gresham and people are giving him the attention he deserves.
Yeah, ROH used to have this reputation of building stars, right? I mean, you look at NXT, you look at Raw, and it's all ROH guys. Yeah. It's not exclusively, right? Like, you know, Seth Rollins isn't a big name just because of ROH. He wrestled in other companies and stuff like that. But you go back and look at the list of former ROH world champions, former TV champions, top prospect tournament winners, mm-hmm. and they're all the big names in wrestling these days. And I feel like they got away from that for a little bit. So it's nice to see him getting back on track and trying to build some big stars, whether it's Gresham or Flip or Skrull or whomever.
Yeah.
So only other thing really on the show was two little brief backstage promos. We got one from the new Kenny King promoting his match for next week. And this has been another pleasant surprise for me. Like, I'm liking King more and more every time I see him.
Yeah, Kenny with a little bit of the baby face sheen rubbed off is a very good look for him.
He's on a Bullet Club begging spree.
Which, you know, for all of us, you remember a couple months ago when we were feeling Bullet Club fatigue?
So was Kenny.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to do something about it.
He is the one helping us overcome. He's our prescription.
Yeah, so Kenny and Adam Page next week is an interesting one. You'd think Kenny has to win, being that he's got a high-profile singles match at pay-per-view. Page has done nothing of any real consequence in ROH lately.
Yeah, not really. I mean, his stories have been elsewhere. So, you know, very unfortunately, after Best in the World in June, we just really haven't seen Page much at all in ROH, inconsequential or not.
Yeah, last time we saw him, it was the screwy finish with Martinez in that street fight mm-hmm. when they both had their shoulders down or something like that, and Paige should have won, and then it was never mentioned.
Yes, it did not. There was no further developments on that. I would have bet that there would be, because that was such a messed up finish that there should have been some kind of, even if they hadn't intended on that, they should have probably worked it into a future storyline. But instead, it just moved on.
Yeah, but so Kenny and Marty Skrull kind of get to continue their feud to an extent, using Paige as a sort of proxy. I'm guessing Kenny steals a pin over Paige next week, and that maybe enrages Ooh, I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if he could just taunt Marty even more. Like, what if he tried to do the finger break next week, or tried to win the match via chicken wing or something, just to really annoy Marty even more? Or if he came out with an umbrella.
I don't see him aping Marty's moves that specifically. I do see him further incorporating those heel tactics into whatever outcome, whatever, you know, match he ends up having with Paige. I don't see him doing the, like, exact Skrull playbook.
No, I'm not saying you should do all of it, but I think if you threw in one thing, like the finger break, it would be like I'd just love to see how Marty would, it would set him off.
Yeah.
Because you know Marty would lose his mind the following week in his backstage promo at that outrage.
Yeah, even just some form of joint manipulation that Marty does, I'd be interested to see Kenny do.
Yeah, so that's next week. And then another promo promoting the 10-man tag at Death Before Dishonor, Bullet Club versus Chaos. And this was pretty...
Yeah.
It's whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
Chaos, you're not popular and people don't like you.
Which, just from a factual standpoint, irritates me because it's not true. Also, they left out one of the factions of New Japan. So, you know, this promo bothered me more than it probably should have.
Yeah, but it's the only build you're getting for this match, so enjoy it.
Yeah, great. We're Bullet Club. We don't like Chaos. We're going to get you. Chaos isn't popular, despite the fact that, like, the guy with the record, you know, the record New Japan IWGP Heavyweight Championship reign is, like, the leader of Chaos. But no, nobody likes Chaos.
And isn't Ospreay in Chaos?
Ospreay is in Chaos. Chaos.
And now he's challenging for the World Tag Team
Title. Yeah, Chaos is a huge stable. I mean, I'll give him this. Like, Chaos is a very big stable. But yes. Yes, Ospreay is challenging for the World Title. And yes.
Yeah, I'll say, as somebody who doesn't watch New Japan regularly, the idea that Okada and Beretta are in the same stable, or Chucky T and Ishii, just seems very wrong to me.
Well, I mean, like, yes, they're in the stable, and so is Rocky Romero and Sho and Yo and Toru Yano. They are all in Chaos. There's a reason it's...
What about Chico El Luchador?
Chico El Luchador belongs to no faction. He is his own faction.
All right. Well, Death Before Dishonor is in 10 days. We have 5 matches now official. Mm-hmm. Lethal Ospreay, Bullet Club Chaos, Briscoe's SCU, Punishment Saban, Sumi Tenille, and Kenny King versus Jushin Thunder Liger. Now, this would seem to leave the card open for another one or two matches. Still,
yeah.
Depending on how long the 10-man tag goes. So, what are those last two matches?
Great question. Well, who is unaccounted for?
Something with Bully.
Something.
We've got Bully Ray, Jonathan Gresham, Flip Gordon, Silas Young, Colt Cabana, Todd Sinclair. Who else hates Bully? Devon Dudley, Spike. Tommy Dreamer.
It's a shorter list to name people who like Bully Ray at this point.
My best guess at this moment, not knowing spoilers from next week or anything else, maybe a 4-corner survival match.
Okay.
Bully, Silas, Flip, and Gresham.
Yeah, okay.
And then Cabana just stays on commentary and they don't do anything with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That would be fine. I'd be down with that because that would also, you know, minimize the pure Bully Ray we would be getting.
Yeah, he'd get in, and you get to see him get pinballed around by all three guys.
Yes.
While also having Silas fight with Gresham and fight with Flip and... Yeah, because so that's one possibility. There's got to be one of the matches yet to be announced has to involve Bully Ray somehow, right? Whether it's Bully and Gresham 1-on-1 or something,
right? Else,
it has to be.
Well, and I mean, we are also not accounting for a whole like other set of heels in the Kingdom who are still nowhere to be found on this card.
Yeah, former 6-man champions Kingdom.
Yeah, not
Bald Taven.
Bald Taven.
They're not on there. Jeff Cobb has been, you know, he's a huge name. He did big stuff the moment he showed up in Lucha Underground, and he just won the Battle of Los Angeles in PWG.
Yes.
So, and now ROH has him under, well, if not under exclusive contract, they have him under a contract.
Yes.
They'd be foolish trying to do something with him on a big pay-per-view, wouldn't they?
This would be the moment, right? Because apparently we're getting another top prospect tournament match next next week's episode, which will, I don't know, I don't want to make any crazy guesses here, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this top prospect tournament match may in fact be another round of Jeff Cobb and his incredible suplex machine. So this would be a good moment for them to give him a match. To give him, like, an actual real match in a pay-per-view?
Could they get away with his, with it being an enhancement match at Death Before Dishonor under the auspices that you're tuning in because it's his first ROH matchup?
Yeah, I think so.
And so, like, yeah, it's not a high-profile opponent, but you're tuning in because it's Jeff Cobb wrestling his first ROH match. And sure, he's only facing Eli Isom. Or sure, he's wrestling a 3-on-1 handicap match against Isom, Ryan Nova, and FR Josie or something.
I mean, I think they can get away with it. I think it can work okay. It pains me to say that, given like what I know he's capable of doing and who he's capable of doing it to. But that's
outside of that. I mean, we got Cheeseburger, we got Josh Woods,
right? And
there aren't too many other baby faces, really.
Right. And if they were going to give him any kind of match, even if it's an enhancement match, it does make more sense for him it to be against, you know, some guys that he may have like tossed across the ring.
Sure. Unless maybe next week he beats up all the future of Honor competitors and Cheeseburger comes out to defend their honor or something. And that gets a last minute setup. Burger and Cobb. Burger and Cobb. That was my day.
Burger and Cobb is the law firm that advertises during ROH TV episodes.
Yes. Has your blue chew lasted longer than 4 hours? So listen, Burger and Cobb.
Can we just please do like a half an hour spinoff of this podcast where I complain for 30 straight minutes about blue chew?
That's the bonus digital content.
Boner bonus.
For subscribers.
You get a boner bonus.
Yeah. So Death Before Dishonor, 10 days, Las Vegas, Nevada. ROH pay-per-views rarely disappoint. You know the match quality is going to be great, even if the stories have been a little scattershot and kind of some weird decisions.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, Sumi and Tennille, I'm really excited to see them go one-on-one. Martinez and Sabin, I'm curious to see what kind of match they pull off.
So. I think once I started thinking about this as the beginning point in stories that were going to be, you know, starting here and like headed towards Final Battle in December, that made me a little bit more at peace with the card. It also, like, if, you know, Best in the World was any demonstration, they kept up a very brisk, very efficient, tight pace with Best in the World that I thought worked really well for their pay-per-view. And I'm hoping to see that again at Death Before Dishonor.
All right. Well, before then, we have one more episode of television. Next week, it is Lethal and Gresham versus Silas and Bully, Kenny King versus Hangman Page, and Jeff Cobb interrupting another top prospect tournament.
How dare you assume...
Presumably. And if he does, then shame on Ring of Honor. Because fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, shame on ROH for not having a new enforcer.
What will become of the top prospect tournament, ROH?
Oh, what about Jeff Cobb versus Hurricane Helms? It's a pay-per-view match.
Definitely.
We haven't seen Hurricane in a while. I was just reminded. Anyway, that's next week. We'll also have our full Death Before Dishonor predictions, although we basically gave most of them on this episode.
Kind of.
We'll see if anything changes. Maybe I'll come out of next week's TV and I'll be convinced that Sabin's going to win the title or something.
Yeah, no, I'll come back next week and say that, you know, without a doubt, Will Ospreay is going to be Ring of Honor's world title holder.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor.
You can find me at Forked PGH, F-O-R-K-E-D PGH.
And you can send emails to talkinghonor@gmail.com.
Yeah.
If you have thoughts, we'll share them on the show and you can have your voice heard. If you have questions, comments, or concerns about anything, such as whether you think Tennille Dashwood is going to turn heel, who you think could also accept a future Jay Lethal open challenge, who Bully Ray is going to wrestle at Death Before Dishonor, or just pics of a bald Matt Taven.
Yes, send us all your bald Matt Taven photos to talkinghonor@gmail.com. They can be photoshopped if you want. If you just want to create your own, DIY it, guys. Create your own bald Matt Taven.
Yes, I like the fire look where you're bald on the top. You got the fringe around the edges.
Yes.
That's my request.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.